Meeting will please come to order. This is a regular meeting of Flavor County. The date is March 25th, 1986. Time is 1:30. Members present, Representative Navarro, Representative Davis, Representative Boucher, and Representative Hanlon. First item on our agenda today, House Bill 589, an act relating to participation in state group life and health insurance policies by residents, providing for effective date. We have the bill's prime sponsor, Representative John Sutton. He'll be the first person to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is John Sutton. I'm Representative District 1. The House bill before you, House Bill 589, is, I believe this is the first time your committee has seen it. What I'd like to do is just talk a little bit about the reasons I introduced it, some of the concepts behind the bill, and I see retirement and benefits is here. Just to take a little rate shock off you, there is a substantial fiscal note attached to the tune of about $13 million. So but we have some concepts of how to reduce that down to zero, and probably explore some of those. But basically, it's an idea that I've had for a long time, and it's rolled around and from the fact that the state has a very good, as we all know, very excellent medical, dental, audio, visual insurance package. And there's about 13,000 state workers that are in this program. And on the other hand, we have a large, I consider a large group of individuals living in the state that have no medical insurance or have very poor coverage. So I've always tried to come up with an idea of how we could meld this together. The concept here was to say, well, why not let people of the state just participate in the state's group medical policy? They could pay whatever the premium cost and whatever the administrative costs would be, and that the group would be large enough that you could get into it. And that's kind of a nice simplistic approach, and as all good simple ideas, they get more complex as they go on. And the ideas that comes up into this is that state policy groups together life insurance, accidental death, dismemberment, and weekly indemnity into their coverage. And I was only looking at medical, so that's one problem there to separate those two out. And the group that, in my mind, was the that doesn't have good group coverage in the state now is the sole proprietor, the small businessman, the individual, the fisherman, and people who basically do not work for large corporations or large institutions. They're the ones that are kind of stuck out there on that health side. So I was trying to figure out a way to get them into a group without costing the state any money. And that's the philosophy behind this. The state has come back, Division of Retirement Benefits, spent a little bit of time working on this, came back with two concepts. One was to do a separate group, that we just create a group in the state of these types of individuals and procure a policy for them, and then they could just work out of that. And perhaps, I guess, Ken, maybe you could elaborate a little bit on that when you make your comments. And the other one I'd like to bring up to the committee is another bill I have in this before you. It's House Bill 547, which is not in front of you today. And that was a bill to create a high-risk pool for medical insurance. And I think there's a way to put these two bills and these two ideas together. And I would like to work on that with the committee. And just briefly, the high-risk side of it, but there's a lot of people, and the ones that came and I talked to were elderly people that were falling out of group policies and were unable to obtain insurance, medical insurance, at any rate, because they had prior disabilities, they had diabetes, they had cancer, they had some other prior existing disability that they were getting knocked out on. And the idea there was to form a mandatory coverage group or an association of all people in the state who write health insurance. Much like we do with our car insurance, where you can't buy, there is a high-risk car insurance group that you can go to buy car insurance. And I said, well, why not do it for medical, so that these people could get some medical insurance. And from the literature coming back from the other states and talking with retirement benefits and the problems that they have with letting people into the state system and this other bill, I think there may be a way to put together a group policy, group medical policy that would allow not only all people who are not high risk, which what this bill was aimed at, but also the high risk people into a group that they could afford to get coverage. And that's kind of the, rather than go through the bill line by line, it's a pretty simple bill. This one here just adds eligible residents into the state program. are the bills over to judiciary? Might have time to work on one of these other bills in the near future. I would like the opportunity to work to put the two ideas together.
Okay. Are there any questions? Representative Boucher.
Representative Sun, as you know, we constantly get hung on the phone of residents. We have in local hire. We do it in voting. I notice that you permit residents of at least 1 year. Is somebody going to come out right away that's only here 6 months and challenge this and will be in a constitutional battle?
Well, you know, I hate to take on a legal argument with so many lawyers in the House here, but I don't think the suspect classification that would bring the all the fire and brimstone and constitution down on top of you to offer medical policies out to require that you have to live here 1 year. My concept was to say that why not create a group of people, and the group is anybody who lives in the state of Alaska. Right now we have a group that says if you're a state employee, you're in a group. I just thought, well, it's expanded a little bit. It's a good number of people there, and ought to be a good number to actuarially make the policy sound. Ken has brought up some points in his letter of why he thinks there may be an adverse selection process that may go on that would adversely tilt the selection in the group. I'm not sure that, I think there would be some, but I'm not sure that the assumptions that they use that it would be 100% difference is accurate, but there probably is some tilting that would happen. But I don't inherently see a real problem saying you have to be a one-year resident to participate in a health group, but it may turn out that we don't need that either, maybe just a 30-day resident. I don't know if that would make a difference. I don't think health care coverage would rank right up there with voting in terms of constitutional rights.
Note for the record that all members of the committee are present. Representative Davis.
Thank you. Representative, just a question of in the drafting of this. Is there any other state that currently has any proposal like this?
Yeah, Connecticut actually has the latest program that we've run into. They offer a program. They take a view that affordable health insurance is a commodity that all residents should have. And they have a program that's not just for high-risk people. They just have a group policy that you can join. And they kind of administer it. They have 50,000 to 60,000 people in the plan. And about 60% of those people are under the age of 39. So I think that kind of gets to the adverse selection process that are they getting a lot of elderly, high-risk, high-medical-risk people, and their experiences know they haven't. So from the literature we've gathered from there, and there's several other states that have these policies, that we think we can put the two concepts together.
So they set this their policies program up without this high fiscal note.
Yeah. The concept here is to see if we can't put a group together or a pool or if we have to mandate that if you want to write health insurance in the state of Alaska, you have to participate in this pool over here. I don't have a problem doing that. If the cost of the pool are all funded from the private side, the great deal this year is to find bills that have zero fiscal notes on it, and a real incentive here to work on this stuff. And I think there's a way to put it together in a way that we can help the people of the state here get some health insurance coverage at zero or very low cost. I think, we have some big chunks that are going to be taken out of it, but I think Ken has some comments that he could make that probably bring up some of the issues that we're talking about.
Any other questions? Representative Copeland, have we had any comments or positions taken from the Department of Health and Social Services?
Yeah, I think there's one in here. No, I guess that Reverend Copeland is from the Farm Administration, the position paper in there. I don't think Health and Social Services.
I just thought it was appropriate to deal with health and social services, or who have responsibility for both preventative medical services and for Medicare, Medicaid, and all the other issues that have responded for Medicaid. In other words, it would fit in with the overall responsibility for that particular department, and it may be
We'll work on that. Yeah. And I know you have a lot of other bigger issues in front of the committee today, so I don't take a whole lot of your time. But I would like the opportunity to try to put these two bills together and bring it back before the committee in the very near future here. Thank you. Kristen, about the bill.
Representative, I'd just like to make a public comment on the efforts you put forth in the last 2 years of bringing constructive legislation. Every piece of it that I've read, I think, is an improvement on the system, not just a reintroduction of a bill that somebody found. I particularly, as an old timer, it's been around and the very impression.
Well, there's a couple.
So I just about vote for it because you I hope that embarrasses you.
Yeah.
I like to recognize talent. And you got it.
There's probably some people in this room that disagree with a couple of pieces of legislation I have in my
I disagree with a number of them. But that doesn't mean I don't recognize the talent and the effort.
I appreciate it.
I don't say it publicly, it's private.
We just, John, we talked about bringing this bill back. It seems like they could take care of any, the rates could take care of any positions.
Well, actually, to administer this bill here, of the $13 million fiscal, only about $108,000 of that is administration to handle 16,000 cases that they see people applying. That's only $8 a case. And I think the administrative fee could be built into the cases. The big part of the fiscal, though, in the way I read it, is the adverse selection process that they see happening in the state system. That I thought one way to amend it is to say that you have to be eligible for state employment if there was a job available. May take care of the adverse selection end of it, because we don't ask you what kind of health you're in when we hire you as a state employee, but I think rather than head in that direction, I'd like to try to put these concepts together.
Representative Boucher.
Yes, one thought. What do the other companies think of it when you get this busy?
I haven't seen too much aversion from the industry now. It's a self-funding program, and the only concern is that we originally started by saying everybody who writes, this is the other bill, and anybody who writes health insurance in the state has to participate. Well, there are some carriers that write very little, so we're trying to work on a level, maybe say you have to write $100,000 worth of coverage in the state before you have to participate in this pool. But no, I don't think they have any, there's nothing that would be adverse to them. It's more business. If it's self-funding, obviously we ask them to subsidize it, then they may get a little concerned. But I think some of the concepts that get into that, of why the state system may not be the best way to go, add into setting up this other pool. And I don't always understand what Mr. Humphrey says, but I always am interested in hearing his point of view. He was fairly constructive. And he has some ideas on how to proceed.
He's been around a long time saying it.
Well, he used to work for us, yeah. Or he moved over to the other side.
Any further questions?
No, thank you. Mr. Chairman, I really need to go to judiciary to help clean the tables and get ready for some other legislation here. So I have my staff here and Ken's comments and try to get back to him and get these two together.
Okay. Mr. Humphries, did you wish to testify?
Approach it, and I think we've kind of interesting to see and get a little bit of experience and see what experience we had with the riots. Track it as a separate group, and you, the legislature, would have the opportunity to look at it and decide very straight out to what extent you wish to subsidize it. Initially, the way I conceptualize it anyway, it would be a self-supporting arrangement. And then from there, you can take it wherever you would wish to go with it. I don't particularly see any problem, again, not being a lawyer myself, with some residency requirement. I think maybe some requirement might be useful, and it would help to give the group integrity if we're talking about the group being all Alaskans. Beyond that, we're going to work with Representative Sun and try to make whatever resources we have available. And I think ultimately, in response to Representative Kaufman's question, probably that when a CS is developed, it would be very appropriate to have a position from Health and Social Services, because I believe ultimately that's where it would be administered, or at least overseen. But what I'm thinking of wouldn't involve much in the way of adding to the bureaucracy. It would be more of the state facilitating the establishment of this group and then sort of fading into the background. But that's just my thought. That's really all I think.
Any questions? Thank you, Mr. Hall.
Thank you.
My comment that I then wish that Health and Social Services look at the bill even now, because anything, any measure like this has to be part of the overall health plan for this state.
I didn't result in a thought of this coming up. Health and Social Services.
Yeah.
Is there anyone else who wishes to testify on 589? Recover. So if a truck runs through a bar, that?
Yeah, I've got...
Yes.
Here.
Complete.
It is a complete defense plan action for damages, so on and so forth. Just the language that I...
Right.
Do you want me to read off it, or...
No, but I think that's...
Okay, actually, I should read off it, because the wording that I had originally, yeah, I had originally offered was not presumed, and we've got presumed here, presumed in the bill, so why don't I just...
We'd be happy to take that. I don't think there's a problem with...
Yeah, this is...
I don't think there's a problem with what we're doing in that sense.
Just attack anybody who's, you know, anything that wants a drug, but I'm a free kind of target.
It's open season.
It's open season. I originally offered said it is conclusive proof, and this one says it is presumed, and that's the difference. And the presumed is the better language. This language is in the intoxication statute. Right, the presumed language. So, here is the statute for this one.
Right.
But,
is that a problem?
No, I think it should be
in
the statute.
We just want language in here that says they have to be at fault.
I'm just saying, do you want a motion to that effect that we just get a deal?
No, because I don't think the bill is quite ready yet to adopt. There's several other changes that have to be made.
Okay.
Periodic payments section has to be rewritten.
The person, just as someone is overcompensated, someone is under. things or those things that really aren't all that big a deal, by saying that no non-economic damages will be awarded unless a certain criteria is met. And I don't know what that criteria would be. Would it be a judge's decision that that catastrophic damages have occurred? Is it a medical opinion? And I don't know how that would be accomplished. That's what I'm having trouble with, and that's what I'm trying to get information. What that would do is that allow the flexibility so that somebody who really doesn't deserve anything and wouldn't get anything, couldn't pursue anything, but there wouldn't be a limit for someone who, like a paraplegic who had a real problem and needed to have something beyond $250,000. And it would allow each case to be, you know, evaluated on its individual merit.
Okay.
So I have some ideas that I've been thinking about. One way to do it was to tie the criteria to actual demonstrated economic loss and make it a percentage of that. The other one would be to maybe perhaps establish it based on medical criteria, that a physician says, because it's by the paraplegic, this is a catastrophic injury. Perhaps it could be a percentage of the combination or individually the medical expenses as well. So things are already proven would give an indication. If someone's only spent $25,000 in medical costs and somebody's bill is $500,000, you know there's a problem there. So I would be willing to look at any one of these things with the intention of eliminating the opportunity for someone to claim non-economic damage when they really don't have anything significant, but allow the flexibility for someone who does have significant non-economic damage to be more accurate.
If a drunk driver, for example, hits someone and causes them harm, breaks a leg, and they're out of commission for a couple months, and the leg recovers completely, they get whatever their lost wages were, so they're essentially made whole. Now, I guess it's just comes down to the determination of whether if he's whole, whether he should be compensated at all for having had the pain and inconvenience of a broken leg.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean that as compared to if you get hurt in an accident where someone was at fault, but it was something that they, I guess, did everything they could to try to prevent, but you still end up with a broken leg.
I'm not sure which way you are stronger than what you're saying, but the fact of the matter is that the award, whatever it is, whether it's just economic or whether it's got some non-economic, in your scenario of somebody having a broken leg and a couple of months being whole, that person is not going to get a non-economic award because he's already whole. And what we're talking about are catastrophic situations where the person never regains use of whatever
right.
it is
right.
they lost.
That's the only means you would say. Only time you are proposing that they be allowed to recover non-economic pain and suffering.
Right.
And
that's what we're, how they came up with this is getting economic losses for
it. I know they are, and I'm not sure that you can.
I think if you come up with one cap, it either has to be so high that you cover just about everybody, or it has to, you know, to be so low that I think it's, you know, in my own mind, trying to come up with a number that I would feel comfortable with in terms of putting a cap, at least for me, this relieves some of the discomfort of putting a cap on. And the main concern of the cap is that I don't care how much money somebody gets if they deserve it, but I don't think that it ought to get anything if they don't deserve anything. And if they've been made whole, then they don't get any non-economic damages. But if they're a paraplegic, they're never going to be made whole, because they're going to be a paraplegic with good, you know, reliability, good, you know, certainty at this point in time for the rest of their lives. And that's something different.
And those are the people that we've all kind of mostly always agreed that we were worried about.
Yeah.
So what about the case where, you know, that you cited as someone struck by a drunk driver? What's certainly, you know, I mean, that the guy was tried under a criminal charge, that constitutes assault with a deadly weapon, i.e. 1H10. Are you going to sock him for punitive damages? Because he
his action, deliberate or not deliberate, about neighboring property.
Why don't we just put in there that nobody who doesn't deserve it can be covered by
I go for that, but I don't think that would be enough. You have to be that's what the whole thing is trying to come out.
You just built your criteria, didn't you?
I think we've got to set some criteria. If this is going to work, we've got to set some criteria.
I agree.
Which direction people fall through the cracks, we can see it from now until next year and the following year. And one of us is going to think of an exception to everything.
I agree, and we have heard testimony, or at least in general terms, that there's a problem out there where people are recovering from suffering and it's not justified, and usually the examples that we hear are huge awards. You know, but what I think we need to know, and
do we have any evidence in Alaska cases,
Ellen?
Well, you don't separate it out now, so you can't really tell. That's the bubble.
Black book.
This may be necessary just to have something like this in order to separate it out and then deal with it as we go along. It's part of the problem is the lack of data.
That was the thing I was going to say. We don't know how often it happens. We have heard that it's happening. But from my perception, at least, it seems like there could be a problem, but I don't in fact know that. We're going based on a perception rather than on any real data. Representative.
We might as well go through this whole discussion. We're looking at the fact that our businesses can't get insurance. And they desperately need to be able to get liability insurance, or they're not going to have businesses in the state, or else they're going to be going bald or whatever you want to call it, which is there, which is going to keep anybody from recovering in the state.
Nobody can bleed through.
It's going to keep anybody from recovering. So, anything we can do, I think, is going to help mitigate the circumstances. Okay, you kept saying that you were unhappy with the paraplegic and so on. Okay, we've come back and said, okay, we're unhappy with it too, and I think we all are, and we can all agree that that's the problem. But I also am looking at allowing some of our business people to maybe do some self-insuring through pooling, where a bunch of them go together and set up their own kind of self-insurance. Now, $100,000 a whack or even $50,000 a whack adds up to big numbers fairly quickly. So if we say there'll be no economic damages unless we have da-da-da, we can all agree that we're having non-economic damages out there. And even if they are $50,000, whatever they are, it adds up very quickly to the point where our businesses are not able to afford the kind of liability insurance that we're telling them they ought to have. And they're having to go bald or bare. I like that. So, what this would do would be help him. It would take care of your problem, and I think we can figure out a way where we can say that the judge will have some criteria, and we can set the criteria, and everybody probably won't be happy, but they're not going to be happy no matter what we do. But we will have helped those small business people that I am out there. I mean, those are the people I'm hearing from. They're the ones sitting in my district that I'm out to fight for. I think we are taking care of that problem, but we can't forget that those $50,000 whacks or even $2,000 whack adds up pretty quickly, and it makes your insurance rates go up pretty quickly. And if anybody gets anything to not ever being able to wear high heels anymore, we need to do away with that.
What was the recovery?
It's in court right now. What I'm saying is that I guess I'm looking at this not in terms of what the experience has been or how many people, because obviously we don't have a perfect system in that we currently have. It isn't perfect, so we wouldn't be discussing the issue.
Right.
So to me, I don't want to hear that argument again. My interest is in my perception is that we have a system that for whatever reason has gotten out of control, and the efforts that the victim has to go through to the claim damages is gotten totally out of whack, and it's become expensive to the detriment of the victim. Now, I'm trying to come up with something that addresses the needs of the victim and gets rid of some of that crap that makes it harder for the real person who's got attorneys, defense attorneys, and everyone that I know who's expressed a concern.
We discussed this earlier today and talked about if a guy breaks his arm and he heals, then he shouldn't be able to recover anything for non-economic damages. But what if someone breaks your arm for you? I mean, if I come over there and snap your arm and break it, what's that worth to you? See, if this pain is inflicted by someone else, it seems like there ought to be a schedule that says, I mean, even if they recover wholly, I mean, it's no fun to have a broken arm or a leg or anything, to have pain inflicted on you at someone else's, because of someone else's fault. And the argument is whether you can compensate that pain with monetary awards, and I don't know.
Can the person go to jail for assault? Just compensation?
Yes, but say I hit you with my car accidentally.
People can take care of that today. People can go out and buy an insurance policy like the one I have. It covers me for those things. I'm covered if I get injured, I have disability. I'm totally covered. If somebody hits me, if I slip and fall, I'm covered. I don't have to sue anybody else because I've got an insurance policy. Because I figured out what I'm worth, what I think I'm worth. I'm not sure myself what. So what my income is worth. And so I think that there is a mechanism out there already.
Well, I guess what I'm getting at is, yes, there is. It's our court system that, I mean, that's one of the mechanisms, our court system, which is not working, or at least it's perceived as not working by some people. And on the non-economic things, I guess we're just getting down to a basic whether or not anybody should recover for pain and suffering other than catastrophic pain and suffering, right?
I would hope that we can come out of this meeting with a provision that's something that affects. If it doesn't, then I would go for the 250 women and be fine on that.
Okay.
Anyhow,
I have a book here. If anyone would like, I'll pass it around. It just has some trial verdicts and settlements and different. It's fairly interesting. It has some settlements and offers and judgments. Okay, well, are we all agreed on non-economic? Okay.
Well, are we just going to submit our amendment to that?
Why don't we try to come up with some language, and I'd be happy to work with anyone to try to figure out something on it. I really am kind of torn between this. I recognize that we need to have some type of a limit.
One more time, bring it from the fact that we are all sitting here potential victims.
Thank you.
We're all sitting here if you as a potential victim would have a choice in having a cap that is inflexible on any potential damages you have, or would you rather have an opportunity to have your situation evaluated on its own merits? And that's what I think we're talking about here. I am insured, but not everybody is, and I'm saying if we're talking about not only the people who've had an injury, but those who are potential victims. I think people would say, if it were me, I'd rather not have a $250,000 limit, or a $500,000, or $1 million.
Punitive damages.
What's the standard clear and convincing evidence?
What is the standard?
I mean, strict is that standard, is that
stricter than it is now?
Criminal court standard.
Periodic payment section needs to be rewritten and represent a call and several new suggestion on periodic payment.
longer.
And it does cover some of it.
Which is better, of course.
Lost income and future medical expenses. It doesn't cover expenses that, for example, you've already incurred, that type of thing. So it is only future damages that if you weren't injured, you would have those, like for instance, lost wages. Normally you just get them every year along. You wouldn't get them in a big lump sum initially. So
settlement. There's no reason for him to settle. He might as well just go and risk losing whatever we have, the entire judgment amount, and set up an annuity to take care of it.
Aren't settlements sometimes set up as
They are, but they're a settlement. That means that they're agreed to by both sides. Mm-hmm. We're mandating a periodic payment, and that doesn't mean that there's going to be a settlement in which both sides agree. See, with the offer for settlement now can be decreased according to whatever it would cost to fund a periodic payment. I mean, that's what it seems like to me. I could be wrong. Been wrong before.
Collapse three.
on federal benefits.
Down at the bottom on number three, I think it says gratuitous benefits provided to the claimant by a relative of the claimant, which would mean that they could count things, for instance, given the claimant by the church, his or her church, or in the case of a fire department would go out of our way to get called again. And so I would just say strike by the relative of the claimant if that doesn't screw it up, for instance. You know, in other words, any gratuitous, any charitable donation to the claimant should be excluded. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we're going to be itemizing used clothing. That must be arbitrated. We raised the, on page 6, we raised the amount to $75,000. On page 9, dealing with the court rules, it says $25,000. Is there a conflict? What we're trying to do there is put some teeth into the arbitration so that we didn't just go to arbitration and then make it another step. Try to make it where you go to arbitration and if you want to appeal that, you still have the access to the courts, which we have to have by constitution. Right. You have to have access to the courts, but we put a provision in that says cover more than that amount, you have to pay the attorney's costs. That
comments, questions, suggestions? Not until it will be held over until Thursday. I'll try to have a final draft form so we can vote on some amendments and the bill scheduled to move out on Thursday. This celebration afterwards. And if there are no objections to me adjourned, I will be good.